From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. If there were ever an issue that lawmakers could agree on, it would seem to be preventing animal abuse. Each time a story of starving or ill-kept creatures hits the news, the outrage is widespread. But legislative efforts to improve New Hampshire's animal cruelty laws this year have not been easy. The House and Senate have approved two very different bills, reflecting different ideas about how to define abuse, who should pay when it happens, and who's in charge of oversight. Today in Exchange, where's the common ground on animal abuse? Let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at @NHPRExchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests in studio. Representative Peter Bixby is here. He's a Democrat from Dover. He serves on the Environment and Agriculture Committee, which worked on the House's animal cruelty bill. And Representative Bixby, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Bill Boyd. He's a musher from Merrimack. He owns the Midnight Run Racing Kennel, home to 27 sled dogs. He's also a town councilor and a member of Dog Owners of the Granite State. And Bill, it's really nice to meet you, too. Thank you for coming in.
Nice to meet you, too, Laura. Thank you for having me on the show.
Also with us, Jeb Bradley, Republican state senator from Wolfboro. He's lead sponsor of the Senate bill that makes broad changes to the state's animal cruelty laws. And Senator Bradley, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
And also with us, Lindsay Hamrick, State Director of the Humane Society of the United States. And Lindsay, welcome back to you too. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
So all of you, this legislative effort comes after so many stories in recent years. The Great Dane case in Wolfboro, your hometown, Senator Bradley, made the biggest headlines. But there have been a bunch of stories in the past couple of years. 36 Persian cats found in Barnstead in pretty bad conditions. Bunch of cases around the state involving horses. There was a German Shepherd case. And in most of these instances, the animals appear to be malnourished or sick or ill cared for. And people just, it just breaks your heart to see these pictures and to hear the stories. And everybody, but Lindsay, you first, what causes these situations? Why do we keep seeing these headlines?
I think that when we look at the animal cruelty cases that happen around the Granite State, there's a lot of underlying causes, and each case is a little bit different. Certainly, we've seen in the last 18 months four separate cases that involved unlicensed commercial dog breeders, and certainly that was the genesis of Senate Bill 569. But in other cases, you might see things where there might be an underlying mental health condition or somebody who doesn't have the resources to obtain veterinary care for the animals that they have.
So people get in over their heads. Horses are very expensive, for example, and there have been a bunch of cases concerning horses around the state.
Incredibly expensive, and there's only two nonprofit organizations in the state that can care for those horses. So the resources that are available to be able to house those horses through a criminal case or to provide resources are also very limited.
Well, and that's a big issue with some of these bills that we'll talk about. Who pays while there are these cases going on? But just the broader question, again, you know, and Bill, I'll turn to you, the average person like me who isn't really, you know, I have a couple cats, but I'm not really involved deeply in animal issues. I just see these stories and I go, how can this happen?
I think kind of dovetailing off of what Lindsay said, that there are people that do get in over their head. And I think from my perspective, being the responsible dog owner of 27 sled dogs, it requires a certain amount of money to keep up
Absolutely.
With the dogs. And I'm not talking just food. And I'm not even talking vet care. I'm talking about straw. I'm talking about housing maintenance, making sure my dogs have access to clean water, that they have access to the house, that they're kept free from harm, that they're able to interact with their kennel mates. So it's from my perspective, it's not just the food piece, which I'm not gonna lie to you. My wife and I, we spend $18,000 a year to feed our dogs. Mind you, that's just me. I don't know what other people are paying for their dogs, but there is a significant, and I'm not gonna dismiss the issue, there's a significant cost factor. And really, from my perspective, it's a resource piece, people being able to provide the appropriate health, the appropriate welfare, and the appropriate access that they need to human interaction and animal interaction if they have other kennel mates in their premises.
What do you think, Senator Bradley? Again, there's a bunch of different factors that Lindsay mentioned and Bill mentioned, but how do you see these events happening again and again? Why is that?
Well, you know, I think it comes back to weak laws in the state of New Hampshire. When I decided to work with Lindsay and sponsor Senate Bill 569, I convened a group of stakeholders across the board, dog owners, animal cruelty experts, law enforcement, municipal association, et cetera, et cetera. And one thing that came out in as part of that, and just I'm quoting from an email I got, prevention of animal cruelty is not currently a state regulatory function. That was from the state veterinarian. And I was kind of struck by the fact that, you know, we've had a spate of animal cruelty cases, as you did a really good job in the opening of outlining it, and yet as a state, we don't really deal with that. And so what I've tried to do is construct a piece of legislation that's a compromise for responsible dog breeders like Bill, who I don't think, from what I understand about your situation, you would be subject to inspection, and have tried to provide the resources to the Department of Agriculture so that the situations that get out of control, we have a better opportunity to prevent them in the instance. Now, in the Wolfboro situation, the town clerk of Wolfboro reached out to the Department of Agriculture 2 years before the dogs were taken and said, "What do I do?" And the answer that she got back was, "Well, we get into dealing with dog selling issues as they come in the queue." And so nothing happened. And so then suddenly this exploded. And it's not just the Wolfboro Great Dane case, but a number of cases. And so I think it's time to have a responsible upgrade of our laws to better prevent animal cruelty. And that's what I tried to do with 569.
Well, and that's why we're here today. And we'll definitely talk about some of the issues you raised, Senator Bradley. To you, Representative Bixby, too. So weak laws, weak oversight, as Bill and Lindsay said, people getting in over their heads. Why do you think we keep seeing these stories? I mean, these terrible pictures of, you know, starving horses and cats that haven't been, you know, attended to for years and so on.
Well, I think that we have to look at the laws in two aspects. One is in terms of what is there in terms of definitions, and our definitions and our establishment of what counts as animal cruelty is actually very well defined in the state, but the oversight is not very well defined. And like many things, the oversight gets left to local authorities as opposed to having some central capacity to do that at the state level. And one of the things that our version of the bill does is it says before we give money to the Department of Agriculture, we should define what it is that they are going to be doing for pet animals as opposed to livestock. The main focus at the Department of Agriculture right now is livestock. There is no person, there is no department, there is no administrative structure that says that is dealing specifically with pet animals. So,
isn't there a veterinary bureau or agency within the Department of Agriculture?
No, we have one state veterinarian. We will soon be getting an assistant state veterinarian, and the main focus of his work is large animals and making sure that cows don't get various diseases, et cetera. There is no one is looking out after the small animals, and that is why these cases can't get caught in advance. In Maine, they have a small animal department in their Department of Agriculture funded to about $1.3 million. And that department does things like looks at offers for sale of animals. And they caught on to Ms. Fay.
That's the Wolfboro Great Dane case, yeah.
And they started saying, they said, you need to be licensed, you need to follow these instructions, and she left Maine for New Hampshire. We don't have any way of tracking who's selling animals in New Hampshire right now. So that's something that our study commission in our bill is aiming to do.
So let's get a couple definitions out of the way, and then we've already got people who want to jump into our conversation. And Lindsay, to you first. So let's say I have 10 cats in my house, which I don't. I have two. But let's say I have 10 cats in my house, so they're not barn cats, you know, running around outside. Am I an owner? Am I a breeder? Am I a hobby breeder? Am I a hoarder? I mean, how do we define these things? Because some people may say, 10 cats, that's not so much. 20 is a lot. Some people may say 20 isn't so much. I mean, how do we even begin to define breeder, hobby breeder, commercial breeder, hoarder, and so forth?
So one of the policy questions has been about numbers of animals. And there was a suggestion made early on about whether or not the Department of Agriculture should license entities based on the number of animals that are transferred. And we're not particularly comfortable with something that sets the bar at a certain number, because as you've said, you could be an incredibly responsible pet owner with 10 cats or 30 cats or 27 sled dogs. And that doesn't mean that you're doing anything irresponsibly. And you can also be a pet owner with two animals and not provide adequate care. So
it's not about numbers.
It's not about numbers. It's about the ability to care for those animals. And as Representative Bixby mentioned, the New Hampshire animal cruelty law is very clear about what adequate care looks like. So what we want to make sure that we're doing is having state oversight for entities that we believe are transferring animals at a number or a level that really should have that regulatory oversight. And I want to also be clear that current law sees animal shelters, animal rescue organizations, pet stores, and commercial dog kennels exactly the same. So all four of those entities have to abide by the same regulations in animal care under current law. And Senate Bill 569 doesn't change those regulations.
So what do you think, and I want to hear from everybody on this, but Lindsay, I'll start with you. What do you think needs to change? What's wrong with the way that we approach this issue right now?
So the glaring gap for us is that our existing definition of what a commercial dog kennel is unenforceable. And the current definition is somebody who sells 10 or more litters of puppies in a year. And in order to prove the number of puppies that somebody has sold, it's essentially an impossible paperwork trail. And in the case involving Ms. Fay and Wolfboro, as Representative Bixby pointed out, in Maine, where they have a definition about the number of female dogs that are being bred, they were able to approach her and ask for licensing and inspections. But here, when the Department of Agriculture reviewed the situation, there was no proof that she was selling 10 or more litters of puppies in a year. And we agree with that. There is no way to prove that current definition.
Do you want to jump in, Bill? What deficiencies do you see in current New Hampshire law?
With due respect to Senator Bradley, I disagree with his assertion that Senate Bill 569 doesn't impact me. And it kind of dovetail off of what Lindsay just talked about. As it relates to the definition of what a breeding female is, okay, it says it's an unspayed female. When you go to the definition of a commercial kennel, it says seven or more unspayed females. I have eight females. So basically, regardless of whether I have intent or not, I'm automatically, as a hobby breeder, being included as a commercial entity because I have more than seven dogs, and that's the way that the original Senate law reads.
Even though you're not breeding to sell,
correct?
You're breeding because you want to keep your team intact,
exactly.
Basically,
correct.
Your sled dog team.
Which is why the House version, which Representative Bixby was a key player in working on the new language that came out of the House, provided additional clarity on what constitutes a breeding female. It gets into whelping. It gets into a particular time period involved, whereas the Senate bill doesn't get into that. It's basically saying seven or more unspayed females, or 10 or more puppies in a litter, or X number of puppies that have been produced and transferred out in a 12-month period.
So the bottom line for you sounds like, Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, is you don't want to be treated like a commercial breeder. You're a guy, you've got sled dogs, you're not, you know, creating and selling puppies.
Exactly. I mean, we've not had a litter at our house in 2 years.
So that doesn't sound so hard to solve, Senator Bradley. It sounds like a technical point. Sounds like people get together on that.
Unfortunately, maybe Bill hasn't read the definition of what a breeding female is in the Senate version. The female dog would be 24 months of age or older, kept or maintained for the purpose of breeding and selling the dog's offspring. I mean, it's pretty clear. So that's where I think that he's exempt. Yeah. If he's not selling, he's not a commercial kennel. It's really clear. And I think that, you know, Representative Bixby actually did a pretty good job of making my case for me and outlining the problem. The state doesn't want to get involved in animal cruelty cases. That's been increasingly clear by the positions of the state veterinarian for years. They didn't want to get involved in the Wolfboro case, said that the law was not clear enough to give them oversight, and now the state veterinarian has made it clear that it should be a local issue. And guess what? We've seen what has happened
when we haven't
not had state oversight of this, a spate of animal cruelty cases. And I think that, you know, the situation that Representative Bixby outlines, absolutely the fact. The Wolfboro case, the woman came from Maine to New Hampshire because our laws are weak. And unfortunately, there's a huge difference between the House version of this bill and the Senate version. The House version actually weakens existing law. And to me, that is very, very problematic.
Well, that's the critique, Representative Bixby, that others have made, including Senator Bradley, that your bill actually is weaker than what we have. And given all these cases, we need stronger. That's the knock.
That's actually not accurate. In fact, we would say that ours is stronger, and one example is that definition of a breeding female. Under the Senate version, the way you tell it's a breeding female is by the intent of the owner, and that is very hard to establish without some further guidelines about what constitutes the intent. And our bill says, if the dog has had a litter or been in whelp within 12 months, it is a breeding female. If it has not been had a litter or been in whelp within 18 months, it is no longer a breeding. It is not a breeding female, and the difference there is a commercial kennel will continually be breeding their dogs. So you can tell by whether the intent to breed and sell is there by how frequently they breed.
So what about the broader critique, though, that the state should have some oversight? Because right now it's up to the local towns, and we keep seeing these cases over and over again, beyond the sort of, you know, 18 months and how many puppies and so forth.
That is a problem with the Senate bill as it stands. And the House bill addresses that by saying we need to have a study commission in order to figure out how to establish positions within the Department of Agriculture that will really oversee this.
Costs money.
Yes, it costs money.
Bringing in more people.
The Senate bill asks for two people for the Department of Agriculture, but in fact it does not specify how they will be used. And the Commissioner of Agriculture said, I will use these people for my highest priority at the moment, not necessarily for inspections.
So that doesn't make you feel like that would give the oversight that you feel is needed. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. And I know all of you want to jump back in on these topics, which is wonderful. Got a lot of people on the line, too. So you can join us with your comments and questions. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the Exchange, we're looking at New Hampshire's animal cruelty laws. Two competing bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, what they say about how these laws should be changed. And we'd love to hear from you. You can send us an email as well, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Or again, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477.
Spring is just about here, and Morning Edition is hitting the road. In our new weekly series, we're traveling across the Granite State to take you to new places and introduce you to new people.
Yeah, the moon looks very cinematic. What are we expecting to see tonight?
Yeah, people come here to see the alpacas.
Homebrewers starting out, how do you get from just whipping up batches in your basement to opening up your own tasting room?
Listen to Radio Field Trips, Morning Edition's new series about New Hampshire life and culture, Wednesday mornings from 5 to 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, preventing animal cruelty without harming legitimate, caring pet owners and breeders. That's the issue the legislature is struggling to resolve with two very different bills. Send us your questions by email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Bill Boyd, Lindsay Hamrick, Senator Bradley, Representative Bixby, let's go to our listeners. And first up is Ashley and Meredith. Hi, Ashley. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there.
Go ahead, Ashley.
Hi. So I am actually a veterinarian. I practice emergency medicine in Meredith. And I got my start down this path through an animal hoarding case. In May of 2003, HSUS took 250 cats and 18 dogs from a house in Maryland. And I helped work with those cats for the summer. And that's what started me off down veterinary medicine. And now I am a veterinarian. And I just wanted to comment that, I mean, I absolutely support more monitoring, more legal restrictions, more penalties, ways to track people state to state when they've committed these crimes. But ultimately, there's a mental health issue that is at the basis here. People with, normal mental health states are not accumulating houses full of trash or houses full of cats. And we really have got to address both aspects of this to make sure that, yes, people that do this can't just hop a state line and do it again. But ultimately, if all we're doing is criminal penalties, we're not helping anybody, the people or the animals.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Ashley, and good to hear from a veterinarian. And how do you define hoarding, Lindsay?
She brings up such great points about underlying causes of animal neglect. And there are a variety of different kinds of animal hoarding that researchers have come up with. And one of the major concerns that we have with the House amended version of this bill is that it seeks to add animal hoarding as a criminal penalty under the animal cruelty law. From our perspective, because this is a mental health condition, because it requires such enormous resources for mental health support and social services, the way to prevent the cruelty from happening in the first place isn't to criminalize the condition. It's to make sure that our local animal shelters and other resources are available to provide that care to those owners. One of the things that we've seen over the years is that as the local nonprofits that don't receive a penny of state money for this work, the more money they spend caring for the animals that have to be held through the duration of the criminal process is less resources that they are able to devote to preventing the cruelty from happening in the first place through low-cost veterinary care and connecting folks with social services.
Is that a fair critique, Representative Bixby, that your bill should not criminalize hoarding because that's not the way to approach a mental health issue?
The reason that we put the hoarding provision in, and we put it in under negligence, is that currently, if someone is found to be hoarding animals, then the first animal that it is found in their house will open them up to a misdemeanor charge of neglect. And every single animal beyond that puts them in the felony territory. So if you have a hoarding situation, that person is immediately subject to felony prosecution.
Is that the right way to go?
And I don't think so. I think that that prosecutors should have another option for someone where there might be some sort of issue that is not strictly criminal. But there needs to be something that can be that person can be charged with, because without a charge, then they would be free to have animals again and again. So what our bill does is it sets out purely objective situational identifiers of what the hoarding is, so that if there are this many animals and they are lacking these essential conditions, then that is considered hoarding.
So it's not so much about the number, it's about the ability, as Bill described earlier, the ability to properly take care of them.
Right. And that entire situation for the first offense would be a misdemeanor. So the person isn't in risk of getting a felony charge. But if they have a misdemeanor, it does mean that the state can say, you can't have more than N animals, where N might be zero or it might be one, But the state, after a conviction, the state can limit the number of animals.
Well, here's a question that your statement makes me wonder about, and anybody can jump in. How do cities and towns get these tips anyway that there might be hoarding going on? Lindsay, how do you hear about them?
So most citizens will either report to local law enforcement, they may contact the Department of Agriculture, or they'll contact their local animal shelter or myself. Under New Hampshire law, law enforcement are the only ones that can implement the animal cruelty law. So at some point,
this really is a local responsibility.
It's very much a local responsibility, and we're always referring citizens to their local law enforcement for reporting. One of the secondary concerns with the House amendment is that it changes the ability for people to make those anonymous complaints. And the vast majority of complaints are made anonymously.
Yeah, Bill, I was kind of surprised by that, that, you know, in the case of child abuse, certainly if I have a concern about a child in my school or on my block, I can make an anonymous tip. Should people who have concerns about animal cruelty be able to make anonymous tips to their local police about it?
Speaking as a resident of Merrimack and also as a town council, one of the things in the town of Merrimack that we pride on is our community policing. We have a Merrimack crime line, and there's obviously not many communities have the luxury of being able to have a crime line. But the crime line exists so that people can make an anonymous phone call, make a tip, and that tip gets acted upon by the Merrimack Police Department. They go and investigate whether or not the tip is credible or not credible.
So you think anonymous tips are important in the case of animal cruelty?
I think there's a distinction here. At the local level, I think that's the way, one way that law enforcement can, for the lack of a better word, get into the weeds and actually go look and root it out to see whether or not problems exist. As it relates at the state level, when you get the Department of Agriculture involved, you know, to me, there's a reporting piece there, because now you're talking about somebody's livelihood. It's the same analogy like the drawing a total blank on the veterinarian's name who is being explored losing her license because of care. Those types of cases, I think there should be because it's due process, there should be it should not be an anonymous piece. But at the local level, that's a lot of the ways we are able to get to the root cause of issues.
Do you want to jump in, Senator Bradley, and then I want to go to another call?
Really? I mean, good Lord. The Wolfberg case was brought to light because of two anonymous complaints. And to me, this is the most egregious thing in the House amendment, that we would get rid of anonymous complaints. I mean, are we protecting against animal cruelty or facilitating animal cruelty? The police chief in my town, Chief Rondo, has made it very clear that without the ability for anonymous complaints, you're facilitating animal cruelty. So not only are we criminalizing mental health, which is what the House amendment does, but we're penalizing and really not preventing animal cruelty. So I hope that my friends in the House will realize, you know, how far they've driven this amendment, this bill, off the tracks in terms of trying to do what we're trying to do right from the start, which is prevent animal cruelty, have a reasonable level of inspections of facilities that breed dogs or other animals. And, you know, if the only criticism that we can have of a bill is that, well, we don't know if the commissioner will use the two positions that we created for the inspections, which is enough to do the necessary inspections, if he'll use it for that or something else. That's pretty fixable if we get to a committee of conference.
So this anonymous tip thing is super important, it sounds like, in this conversation. Representative Bisbee, I want to let you jump in, and then I really do want to go to our listeners again who've got lots of questions.
Okay, so as it stands in current Agricultural Department rules, which are approved by the legislature, all tips, all complaints need to be in writing and signed. So
that's how it is right now.
That's how it is right now.
For the Department of Agriculture, not local police.
And our bill does not affect what is allowed for local police. The agricultural rule right now doesn't affect it, and our bill doesn't affect it. It is what triggers an inspection by the state.
So should people be able to make anonymous tips to the state?
I think that it makes sense to have tips to the state be as it is currently under law. I think that for local police, it makes sense to have
anonymous
the capacity to make an anonymous complaint.
I guess if I was going to make a complaint against my neighbor, I don't think I would want him or her knowing that it was me.
I can understand that.
Let's go back.
That's the problem with the House passed bill. It makes it impossible to file an anonymous complaint.
Go ahead,
that's
Bill.
That's the problem.
But that's at the state level. Senator Bradley's issue, somebody went to Chief Ronald, local issue, local control, local action on the issue.
But if we're going to have more state oversight, which some of you have talked about, should that oversight ability be the same as the local, should the tipping process be the same as the local process, Representative Bixby, given concerns that people have about, you know, outing their neighbors about questionable behavior?
I don't think so, because the sorts of complaints that are supposed to go to the state level have to do with people who have commercial kennels. And the
At that level.
If it has to do with a hoarding situation, the state doesn't have control there.
Let's go to our listeners. And then I know we have a lot more to wade through. And let's take Carrie in New Boston. Hi, Carrie. You're on the line. Go ahead. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Morning. I think there's another aspect to this whole conversation, and I'm not necessarily advocating for more legislation, but I'm always advocating for much-needed consumer consciousness. I just started a small business. I board dogs and provide daycare, and this is another aspect of animal ownership that there is no state licensure for dog boarding and dog daycare businesses. I am recognized by my town. But I require that clients come and visit so I can not only know the personality of the dogs, but so that the owners are able to make sure that their dog is going to be staying in a safe environment. They're able to see the rooms where, you know, dogs sleep at night, the social area, the outside run. And this isn't the case for a lot of other facilities. And I think sometimes people make the mistake of, oh, this seems like a really good deal, and then come to find out later their dog was in really just poor condition.
So you board dogs, Carrie, and you're saying your town licenses you, but the state does not. Is that correct?
Well, I, you know, so local, right? I went through the town zoning
right.
and the town planning board process.
So do you, Do you think that the state...
So they can come and they can check out the facility, but they can't tell me you have to have it so and you have to have it this way and you need to, you know, and in many ways I think that's good. And I'm very proud of the business, you know, that I've been able to start, and most of it's really getting generated by referrals. So it means I must be doing something right. But it really is about the consumer consciousness. That is the driving force behind everything with small businesses, especially in my former policy work. If the consumers are awakened on a particular issue and are demanding and wanting to make sure I have my right to go in and see, I want to see where my future puppy is being bred. I want to understand the conditions of the facility or the breeder, the home. And likewise, with if you're going to spend all that money for that special dog,
right.
all of the care and feeding, you better make sure that it's staying and being
boarded. So, Carrie, here's the thing that I'm not quite understanding from you. Are you saying that the consumer should check things out and that the state should
Absolutely.
Not? It's up to the consumer, not the state regulators.
I think there is a role for the state, but there is a bigger role for the consumer.
Gotcha.
It's the
okay.
consumer that drives okay. how businesses decide to operate.
I'm so glad you called because, Carrie, I think I got your point. Thank you so much. And Lindsay, go ahead, jump in.
So Carrie brings up such an important point about consumer education, and we fully support information for consumers to check out exactly where they're obtaining an animal, and that goes for whether they're obtaining an animal from an animal shelter or rescue or whether from a commercial kennel. However, I think that if you envision a licensed commercial breeding operation and there's been no inspections by the state or there's been no complaints that can be given anonymously, if a consumer is able to go to that facility to see how things are being done and notices that the care is substandard, under the House amendment, if that consumer reports that condition to the Department of Agriculture, it's now not an anonymous report. So we're missing that full loop of accountability. And so consumers do have a responsibility, but they also are some of the first people to see something that's wrong, and they need to have the mechanism to report that.
I want to get to a concern that has come up a lot in this conversation, and that's a concern by people who work with a lot of animals, like Bill, concern that the public in general doesn't really understand what they do, and that if stricter bills are passed, it might involve their animals being taken away. Here's an email from Sally who says, I'm a musher. I live in Shelburne. I run Alaskan Huskies and breed dogs for my own team and share with other mushers. Sally says, it is scary to think about the trigger point of abuse or cruelty that can be called in by our neighbors or passersby when they see dogs chained and standing in mud. Sally says, mud is common this time of year, as we all know. I work hard to counter misunderstanding of what the sport means and do a lot of educational programs to counter that. Sally says, I see if this bill, meaning the Senate bill, Senator Bradley, had been enacted, a lot of nuisance for me as a musher should cruelty calls come in, cruelty in quotes. Or if any town administrator wanted to check out when I registered the dogs, if I was truly a commercial kennel. Sally says, I see also knowing how good in general New Hampshire is about the difference between sled dogs living outside and dogs that are being abused, that it truly would be a nuisance and would not result in my dogs being seized. So that's the concern, Senator Bradley, that, you know, if you get too strict, you kind of open people up for all sorts of unfounded claims because they don't understand that, hey, sled dogs actually really like being out in the freezing cold.
Well, I used to have a husky, and I know, you know, I used to be able to leave my husky out on the line with a little doghouse in the middle of the winter. He was happy, happy, happy. But I don't think that trying to prevent animal cruelty should be undermined by, you know, the thought that there could be nuisance calls. And so, you know, to get back to a discussion that Carrie triggered, you know, one of the other big problems in the House amendment is that the public, in under existing law, had the opportunity to inspect the records that animal breeders had. And that's been now eliminated in the House version of Senate Bill 569. So instead of more transparency and more consumer awareness, we're going to get less transparency. And I don't know why you'd not want the public to have access to these records. It just makes no sense, especially in this day and age.
Who gets inspected and who doesn't right now? Breeders get inspected right now?
Well, right now, under the current law, it's 10 litters or 50 puppies would trigger an inspection. And what we've seen in the Wolfboro case is that the Department of Agriculture said, we're not so sure that, you know, we have jurisdiction here because we're not sure she's selling dogs. And so they basically ignored the situation. And I understand that because the definition was so broad. So we've tried to tighten up the definition for the 7 breeding females, which I think is appropriate, and that would trigger an inspection. And an inspection, especially in the cases that we've seen for all the dog issues and the cat issues, would, I think, have that ounce of prevention that would prevent the 84 Great Danes being seized because things got out of control. That's what inspections are supposed to do.
Well, coming up after a short break, I will ask you, Bill, and you, Representative Bixby, as well, who should get inspected, who shouldn't, who gets inspected now, whether that should change. And we'll keep taking your calls, so join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Sally, thank you for that one. A lot more conversation about revising New Hampshire's animal cruelty laws in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the Granite State comes close to repealing the death penalty. We'll find out more. Send us an email before the conversation gets going and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. This hour, how to revise New Hampshire's animal cruelty laws. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So all of you, just before the break, we were talking about this issue of who's inspected and who isn't by the state. And Bill Boyd, as I said earlier, you're a musher. You've got 27 sled dogs. You're a member of the Dog Owners of the Granite State. Who gets inspected right now under our current law?
The way those that are inspected are those that are, you know, to my understanding, it's animal shelters, rescue facilities, commercial breeders. Those are the first three that come to the top of my mind. I'm certainly, as a hobby breeder, I'm not subject to any type of inspection.
So a breeder, again, is somebody who breeds dogs to sell commercially. A hobby breeder, someone like you who breeds dogs pretty much for your own sled dog team.
Like I said, my last breeding was 2 years ago, and the purpose was to, you know, some of my dogs were getting up in the older ages. We wanted to add a little bit more depth and some youngsters to our mushing team, so that we had a variety of be able to mix and match and be able to go out and participate in the races that we participate in.
Like Sally, our emailer, who said she's also a musher up north.
I know Sally very well.
Yeah, and she says, look, I'm not breeding for, you know, commercial purposes, for my own team, for my friends' teams. Sally also raised the fear, and I wonder what you think, Bill, that if we go overboard, you know, any random person may see your dogs, you know, barking in the backyard and say, wow, that guy's a lot of dogs. I'm calling the police.
I'm very lucky. Even before I became a public official, people knew my hobby. And I'm very lucky in that regard, where there was a certain introduction of people knowing that they had a dog musher living in their neighborhood. One of the things that I've done, and my wife and my daughter, what we've done is to outreach to local schools, both public and private, to educate kids on dog sledding, on mushing. And usually it's to complement a module as it relates to the Iditarod that occurs out in Alaska. So as a consequence of doing that particular type of outreach, I've been very lucky in that regard, that and my neighbors have been great, thank God, that they know when they hear...
They don't mind the sound of dogs barking.
they know when the dogs are barking at 5 o'clock. They know it's feeding time.
Yeah,
they know when the dogs are barking at 7:30 in the morning. They know that I'm outside and that I'm working in the kennel. So they understand that it's not a duress bark. It's actually Dad, Mom, you know, JD, they're outside being with the dogs. So
you're known in the community. So somebody called and said, hey, I'm kind of concerned, they would say, oh, no, that's Bill Boyd, and he's a musher, and he's all good.
So anecdotally, back in December, I had just gotten back from training my dogs over at Tower Hill in Auburn, and I had to stop at Shaw's to get groceries. And unbeknownst to me, somebody saw my dog truck, somebody saw my equipment, and called the local police thinking that there was something shady going on with all these animals. And the animal control officer actually knew who I was, has to go through the motions of actually coming out, looking at the truck and looking at my part, make sure everything is okay. And, you know, they were satisfied when they were able to respond to that anonymous complaint, by the way. That was an anonymous complaint that occurred. But now that officer was able to go back and explain to the person, this is somebody known to our community. This is what they do. This is what they engage in. This is, you know, what they use to transport their dogs from races or training locations back to their site.
So Bill's not a breeder, but Representative Bixby, who should be inspected and who should not?
Okay, so as it stands in current law, the inspections actually got accidentally taken out by the House Finance Committee in HB2, because the state vet requested a complete rewrite of the part of the law that covers inspections, and he removed the inspections.
Who's he?
Steve Crawford, the state veterinarian. And well, he requested that. The Finance Committee did not send it back to the Policy Committee, but just went ahead and did it.
Okay, so there's a lot of parliamentary stuff there. So what's the bottom line?
So the bottom line is, under state law right now, there aren't inspections of commercial kennels. That is a recent occurrence, and both our bill and the Senate bill attempt to fix that. Our bill says, at this point, we're going to require inspections upon complaint. And in terms of regular inspections, we're going to look at that in terms of how we restructure things in the Department of Agriculture in order to get it right.
So inspection, I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but this is complicated and I want to make sure I get it right. Right, you would like to change it inspections upon complaint.
Okay, yes.
So, and those are not anonymous. Somebody has to say, you know, hey, Laura Kamanoi complained about you.
Right.
So, and down the line in this study committee, you want to look at whether there's a role for regular, annual, or biannual, whatever.
Right. The Senate bill requires regular annual inspections in order for relicensure for all commercial kennels. And one of the problems there is many of the commercial kennels who are have done all the licensing are doing things right, so they might not need that level of inspection. So that's one way that inspection happens. The other is through health certificates. And health certificates, there's no size requirement. If you transfer a dog, whether you gift it or whether you sell it, in the state of New Hampshire, there has to be a transfer of a health certificate. And both the Senate and the House version say that that health certificate needs to be processed through the Department of Agriculture. That's something else that got knocked out in the rewrite, and we were rather concerned about that.
Wow. Okay, so there's still a lot of moving parts to these bills, and we'll talk in a minute about room for compromise, maybe. Go ahead, Senator Bradley, and then I'm going to go back to our listeners.
So here's the problem with what the House Committee Amendment does, and I would just want to quote from Chief Shigori, who is head of the New Hampshire Chiefs of Police Association. He said, "The House Committee Amendment's carve-out for dogs kept for certain purposes is so poorly written that everyone would qualify and no one would be inspected ever." That's what, unfortunately, the House Amendment does for inspections.
It's too broad a carve-out.
No one would ever be inspected. And that's a problem. And then the last problem, and we haven't really touched upon that, is what about the poor taxpayer? You know, had it not been for the Humane Society, my town of Wolfboro, which is why I'm so passionate about this, we'd be on the hook for a cost of $1.7 million to house these 84 Great Danes because there was no facility that could accept them. They had to be built in a facility by the Humane Society, all their food, all their medical care
which
for 11
care was extensive.
Months, $1.7 million.
While the court
I guarantee
case was
you,
going
Bill,
on.
That if it happened in Merrimack, you'd be sitting in my chair doing exactly what I want to do, and so would you, Representative, if it happened in Dover. And so, you know, there has to be a way to protect due process rights. The Senate does that by a preponderance of the evidence standard and an opportunity to go before a judge and set a bond if you want to retain your animals. But to say that we're never going to do anything about this cost of care problem, organizations like the Humane Society are not going to be able to step up and fill the void in the way that they've done for the Wolfboro case, and taxpayers are going to be on the hook, especially if the House version succeeds and we do less to prevent animal cruelty. That's what's going on here.
So no taxpayer
protection, and we'll probably have more cruelty.
We should explain the cost situation for people who don't quite understand how that happens. I mean, again, I'm sort of your average person. I see these stories in the news. The Barnstead cats, for example, Lindsay, you know, and people say, wow, 30-some-odd cats. And thank goodness for, you know, the SPCA and the Humane Society who come in. But so who does pay when these animals need to be rescued? And in the Wolfboro case, it was very expensive because the dogs had to be held while a court case went on and on and on and on. So I'd love your thoughts, too, on the financing. And then I can see everybody wants to jump in, but we've got a couple more listeners I'd love to squeeze in before we close out. So go ahead, Lindsay, please.
So the challenging part about the animal cruelty laws is that animals are seen under the law as both property and as evidence in a criminal case. And they're the only living form of evidence that has to be held for the duration of a criminal case. And every single year in New Hampshire, the nonprofit community and the taxpayers are footing about $500,000 to care for animals that have to be held while their owners are going through the criminal justice process. So this is not a new issue. The cost for the Great Danes is enormous because a facility had to be created for them. But every single year, your local animal shelters are absorbing those costs. And when they can't, your taxpayers are legally they have to accept those costs as well.
Because it's a legal situation facing the town, and so the town has to deal with it.
And essentially, the law enforcement has to, quote-unquote, hold their evidence for the duration of the case. And in the law, the dogs are the evidence. So the only recourse is if defendants agree to surrender the animals. And in a number of these cases, they've been unwilling to do that. So the legislature has studied this issue for over 10 years. The Governor's Commission on the Humane Treatment of Animals has issued two separate reports on exactly this issue and has promoted that a cost of animal care law that has well-written due process included in it should be part of the solution. And so we're very concerned that the House amendment creates yet another study to talk about an issue that's been studied for 10 years.
All right, we've got to go back to our listeners. And Gina's in Salem. Hi, Gina. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you very much for your time.
Sure. Go ahead, Gina.
Hi. My name is Gina Scrofano. I'm a New Hampshire resident, and my question is for Rep. Bixby. I appreciate you being here this morning. My question is, you assert that the House version of the bill strengthens current animal cruelty prevention laws, yet the House version of SB 569-FN removes the requirement for pet vendors to be inspected by the state before granting them a license to breed, shelter, and transfer or sell animals in New Hampshire. And it also removes the biennial inspection of licensed pet vendors. So my question to you is, what about those specific changes strengthens current animal cruelty laws?
Well, thank you for calling in, Gina. And this gets back to the inspection question. Should organizations or businesses be inspected before they even get up and running?
The House does not object to the idea of inspections. It's just that we want to make sure that it's written correctly. And that's why we're putting it into a study committee, so that we can make sure that the most effective regimen for inspection will take place. In terms of the cost of care issue, the Senate version has a major hole in it, which is that what if the person is poor? They either, before they are found guilty, they either have to lose all of their animals, or the town basically doesn't get any money. Our study commission is going to be looking at a way of establishing a fund at the state level, much like the catastrophic aid fund in education for the one town who has a really expensive special ed student, so that no town gets hit by a really big cost of care for these animals. There'll be a fund at the state level that will provide funding on application for any community that needs help with cost of care. And after a conviction, the convicted will be required to pay restitution.
If he or she can afford it.
If he's at the level that can be afforded. But that gives a buffer so that the towns don't depend on whether or not the victim can afford it, and whether the perpetrator can afford it or the accused can afford it in order to get paid. There will be a fund, and the towns will have that whether or not the person is poor.
Well, I imagine, Senator Bradley, that this comes up a lot because, as Lindsay described in the beginning of the show, sometimes, and Bill too, sometimes people get into these cases because they're just over their heads. You know, they just love animals so much. They don't have that much money, but they just, you know, they just can't help themselves.
Well, first of all, the Senate did have protections for low-income people. We said a judge could set reasonable cost of care that takes the income status of the individual into account. And the problem with what my colleague Representative Bixby is suggesting is it'll never happen. Here's what they're talking about: a tax on dog food. I mean, really? The New Hampshire legislature is going to pass a tax on pet food, or
to fund this catastrophic
you know, cost of care type thing? No. And the other thing that's being talked about is making responsible dog owners pay with a higher fee when they register their dog. I don't think that'll pass either. So we can study this all we want, and nothing will happen, and animal cruelty will keep going on and on and on. We know from the Great Dane case in Wolfboro. I mean, we've all admitted that on this show this morning. The defendant came from Maine because they have better laws in Maine to protect and prevent animal cruelty, came to New Hampshire, had 84 Great Danes, no inspections, even though the town clerk reached out to the agriculture department. The agriculture department responded and said, we don't have authority here. That's why we have to upgrade our laws, because we're going to have more cruelty, not less, and we really need to deal with a situation like my town would have been faced with: $1.7 million, almost 10% of our town's budget, had it not been for the Humane Society. And any other town, there are 233 other towns, I dare them not to feel the same way I do if it happened in their town.
So last question, and we have like a minute left. So opportunities, Bill, for compromise on this thing.
Absolutely. I would not be sitting here if I didn't feel I could work with Senator Bradley or Lindsay or Representative Bixby and the people with the dog owners of the Granite State if we didn't feel we could work together to come up with a sensible solution. I mean, obviously, the Senate bill and the House bill dramatically differ. I'm cautiously optimistic that the Senate will confirm what the House come up with and approve it. I am. If not, if it does go to a conference of committee, I'll be up there doing my best to help craft a sensible solution to this problem. Because at the end of the day, we all abhor what happened to the Great Danes of Wolf Farm and animal cruelty in general. We abhor it.
And there have been a lot of stories, yep, even before the Great Danes. What do you think, Lindsay? Are people going to be able to come together on this? It sounds like we're far apart on issues of cost, inspections, oversight, and so forth.
We think that we can reach an effective compromise with all of the stakeholders, but there has to be an honest conversation about what exactly has happened with these four separate large-scale animal cruelty cases that involved unlicensed breeders. And regardless of what the underlying causes that led to that neglect might have been, the issue is the oversight, and the oversight starts with an enforceable definition of what those commercial kennels are. So we do think that we can reach a compromise. We are deeply concerned about the idea of studying this issue for another year or another 10 years, because we need that change now.
Well, legislature's almost out for the year, so not really sure if that's going to happen in the next couple weeks. You remain optimistic, Lindsay?
Yes, we remain optimistic.
Representative Bixby?
I am optimistic. I think that there are places we can compromise, but the key thing in terms of the cost of care bond is not a workable solution, and we really need to have some way of establishing a real oversight at the state level, not just giving them money to do what they want with.
Yeah, real oversight, but there's a concern about, again, if someone wants to make a tip to the state, your bill would say you have to sign your name to it.
We need to have a person or a department at the Department of Agriculture that will really follow up and be proactive as well.
Sam Bradley, how optimistic are you? Sounds like people are far apart.
I think this show kind of epitomizes where we are, where the state is. And if the answer is, we're going to continue to study animal cruelty, not deal with it, and we're going to weaken existing laws that are already weak, I don't think there's much avenue for compromise. I'm always willing for compromise, but
I got to cut you off there, Senator Bradley. And thanks, everyone. Tough conversation. I appreciate you being here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.